contest on Saturday, September 24th. You could win a berth to the 2022 NHC. And racing fans, the best of night racing continues at Los Alamitos every Saturday and Sunday night. Outstanding racing action is in store this weekend with stakes trials highlighting the racing card. Plus, our nighttime $2 pick six continues to be a popular wager. If there's not a carryover going into our Sunday night program, Los Alamitos will add $10,000 to the pick six pool. That's more money for the horse players to win. The best of racing, the best of nighttime quarter horse racing, always at Los Alamitos. Remember, daytime thoroughbred racing returns on Friday, September 16th.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back and anxious to hear from Sid. I'm going to pull up the... Let me pull up the sale, and let's see what, I mean, it's not instantaneous that the report comes out, but I am curious. We'll see what hips Sid was tracking. They're up to, right now in the ring, 28-28. And this is a World of Trouble that just sold for $50,000, looks like. Nice. Nice. And, of course, we discussed World of Trouble yesterday with John, and... you know, given this has come up repeatedly, actually, and in reference to Sharp Azteca. In fact, I think Sid and I discussed it last week. And you could hear yesterday John was sort of hinting about a similar scenario, that World of Trouble is now going to have to, you know, let his runners, you know, prove out on the racetrack. And certainly there are plenty of people, Sid, I can tell in the background, Sid, I just saw that World of Trouble sell for $50,000, and John Sakura was with us yesterday, and we talked about the sales results of the roster of Hillendale. And, you know, if you look at Sharp Azteca and his produce and how they've performed, there's plenty of, you know, reason to expect that there's no reason not to expect that the World of Troubles can't go out there and you know, prove people wrong that are suspicious about his potential as a stallion.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, it's tough for any stallion to succeed. And then, of course, when you have the cloud over them, like Sharp Azteca, World of Trouble, Chancelot, that adds, you know, even more baggage to the equation. But, you know, these people that get these horses, got them for a certain reason, And, sharp as tech. I got a chance to see him when I was in Three Chimneys, and just a beautiful horse, a really beautiful horse, incredibly masculine, strongly made horse. And it's funny, he's mostly just a bay horse, but he's throwing a lot of flashy-looking foals. But more importantly, he's getting really good ones. And, you know, we've talked about Tyler's Tribe and the big figures he's been running, but, you know, Doug O'Neill has that turf horse that ran second in the 500,000 race at Kentucky Downs after winning at Monmouth. And this past weekend, honed another sharp as Tekka ran second in the Grade 3 Iroquois. John Sikora at Hillendale kind of makes stallions like these, you know, horses that had incredible speed, but might not have the biggest sire lines behind them. A horse like Candy Ride is an excellent example. Now he's got Army Mule by Frisian Fire. That's just, getting winner after winner, and now he's got a couple of states winners too. And World of Trouble, is one of the fastest horses we've seen out in recent times, sprinting. So I can only imagine he'll come out firing.
Well, we're in that section of the sale after book four now, and the first half of book five today. What hip were you watching just now, Sid, that had you tied on?
I was, we've been selling some B jerseys for Mr. Fipke, and it was the B jersey out of Risky Agenda. I think she ended up making $17,000. She had a 7,400 reserve on her, though. And 2 days ago, I put a 14,000 reserve on a B jersey, and that one made $70,000. So, seems like at every day level, prices are exceeding the reserves pretty handily.
That's an interesting, just the fact that, B jersey, kind of a, I don't want to say obscurity, but, it comes from that group of stallion that, shows up at this point in the sale. And, they've got to catch the eye. The physical has to catch an eye, basically, sale prospects or purchase, buyer prospects, so that, it's not just one person on the hip that basically steals the horse at a bargain.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, the one that I put the reserve of 14 the other day, that signifies, you put 14, you think it'll go past that and the bidding will take it to 20 and, you'll sell. Of course, you can sell for 15 too, since that's where you put the even number reserve, so it goes, you put 14, technically at 15, you're out. That one had a 14 reserve. I thought it would make 20, and just like you said, in this particular case, two or three people kept bidding up small increments and went all the way to 70.
Well, that's excellent. There were two, there was a filly and a colt, and that hip 28-22 was the one that you were watching, and there's another one, and I see the dam La Soul, this colt out of La Soul, 35-27, so that one will go tomorrow, and when I see La Soul, that's obviously a Fipke homebred.
Right, yeah. No, that's and it puts those names in. Speaking of Fipke homebreds, everybody knows this year, for example, that Spike Sherrill was a G1 winner and he ran fourth in the Woodbine Mile, had some bad luck. But the Philly Lady Spike Spear won again at Woodbine this weekend. And both those, you know, Lady Spite Spear is out of Lady Shakespeare, who's out of Lady Shirl, and Shirl Spite is out of Perfect Shirl, who's out of Lady Shirl. Well, a new statesman just joined the group when Ready for the Lady won the Grade 3 at a mile and three-eighths of Woodbine Sunday. He's out of Perfect Lady, and Perfect Lady is a daughter of Lady Shakespeare, who's a daughter of Lady Shirl. So, you know, it's interesting how that one family has been super productive this year for Mr. Fripke.
Well, and I just looked ahead, Sid, because I was curious how many more are going to show up on the last couple of days, Friday and Saturday, and you're going to be busy because there's another 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. There's 12 B jerseys in book 6, and that includes hip. How about hip 3952, a filly out of Tale of Le Comité, out of Perfect Le Comité, out of Le Comité. This is the family of Munnings and Munnings' sister.
Yeah. That's right.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Well, this filly has got to have residual value even if she never makes the races.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
Wow.
And, you know, Pete Jersey, he's only had a couple of winners this year, but one of those is that filly at Gulfstream that won by 14 and a half lengths. And people are talking about her. So there's, you know, there's going to be a little buzz. He himself didn't really get to the race until he was three. But he's a big, good-looking horse. And, you know, Mr. Fipke bred some really good mares to him. And so, we sent one of them Doug Watson in Dubai, because he sends a couple every year. And so, you know, he himself, that's where he started off, remember? In Dubai with Doug Watson, where, he placed in the guineas out there. And he was sent out there because kind of to let him, you know, the Spite fans, we always say give him some time. And so he was sent out there kind of his three-year-old year, and true to the Spitestown bloodline, because he's from Jersey Town. He's by Jersey Town. That's B Jersey. Then he won the Met Mile at four. So I would expect some of these B jerseys to really not be ready to crank up until they're three.
Should mention, Sid, I got two questions on this front then, and because I see some Tale of Verves as well. There'll be, looks like 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 Tale of Verves in book 6. What, and I suppose it's a special circumstance given Chuck's resources. However, in general, what has to happen? How many winners, what percentage of winners, what percentage of stake placements or stake wins gets a B jersey or a Tale of Verve, to become a mainstream interest of commercial breeders?
Now, keep in mind, Steve, that these are horses that are standing extremely quickly. So Tale of Verve stands for 2,000 at Darby Dan. He had a colt that ran third in that 500,000 turf race I was talking to you about at Kentucky Downs, where the Doug O'Neill Sharp Azteca was second. In third place in that race was a Tale of Verve that actually only sold for 3,000. Huh. And he's already earned 76,000. Mr. Fipke is, I mentioned this to somebody the other day. He's the only guy in racing, and I mean it, the only guy in racing that his stable is comprised of homebreds. He doesn't buy yearlings at auction. So, like, you know, in September, he's not buying anything. So he breeds his own, and he races his own. And he's the only guy that does that exclusively. Now, there are other people that breed their homebreds and run them, but they're always supplementing yearling purchases and so forth. He doesn't do that. And the other thing is, he's the only guy that stands his own stallions, and it doesn't matter. In the case of Taylor Verve, he was classic placed behind American Pharoah, but he's not a stakes winner. He's standing him. In Indiana, he's got a first crop sired by Medaglia d'Oro out of Lemons Forever as Broodmare of the Year, named Forever d'Oro. That colt, that horse that stands for 2000 in Indiana, already from his first crop, has a winner of $100,000 stakes race. And, you know, he's done this kind of stuff before because he stood the unraced Sadler's Wells horse, Not Impossible, up in Canada, and he got the Queen's Plate winner, Not Bourbon, by that stallion. So, you don't hear of guys standing unraced or stakes-placed horses. He stands Perfect Timber, a son of Perfect Soul, who's not a stakes winner, and that stallion just had a 100,000 stakes winner in Canada called Talk to You Later, that Chuck bred and sold. So it's important to appreciate this guy because, seriously, nobody else funds their entire racing stable with homebreds, half of which are by stallions he himself had raised as homebreds.
Now, there's few and far between, actually. When you say only, that just tells you. I mean, it's a valuable and diminished aspect of the racing / breeding community, Sid. Right? I mean, there were a lot more Chuck Fipkes. In generations past.
Oh yeah, that's the thing. And even the ones you have now, say George Strawbridge, or his cousin Charlotte Weber,
Yep.
They still supplement by buying yearlings too. You know what I mean?
Yes.
50 doesn't do that.
Yeah. No. He's. It's. Point well taken. The willingness to, to offer these, these stallions at and these bloodlines at the price. I mean, the question is, Sid, and I'm sort of grappling with some of this, with what we're trying to do with our two broodmares. The perspective of my inquiry about what would make, what kind of successes are necessary to make these viable as commercial choices, because obviously it costs people more to raise a baby than even getting 7,500 or 10,000 doesn't cover what was involved.
Oh, yeah.
to raise
That's
a baby.
Right.
And the mare, I mean, you're keeping mares for $25,000-$30,000 a year, plus whatever stud fee,
right,
plus the care of a weanling to yearling to take it to market. So, you've got to get 50,000 to at least break even and carry you forward to a year. So
that's right.
Who is drawn to them as stallions, people that are basically breeding to race?
They are. And so what he's done in these cases is he's bet some mares to them to sell and put them out at a deep discount. to see what those horses will do, and if they can do something to make that stallion, as you point out, be a commercial vehicle. But, you know, to even begin to stand a stakes-placed horse is so anathema to this business. But, you know, one of the things about Chuck is, I mean, he just loves his horses, and it's very difficult to get him to sell anything. And so, you know, one of the things he'll do is breed these horses, and as you point out, if you use the 50,000 barometer, he'll breed them and then put them out there at a deep discount so that others might have a chance to buy them and race them, because ultimately, if they do well, they'll help his stallion. In the meantime, he himself is breeding mares to his stallions to race. So you'll see, you know, you'll see him with, you know, like you saw him with the Knott Bourbon winning a Queen's Plate from by an unraised stallion, you know. You'll see Chuck 50, even though he'll breed to a good stallion, it's like Spikestown and More Than Ready that we just talked about. Look, he's still got a Met Mile winner, G1, by his homebred stallion, Jersey Town. And that was B Jersey. He got a Breeders' Cup Turf Distaff winner in Perfect Sherl by his own stallion, Perfect Soul. So, you know, again, Knott Bourbon by the unraised Knott Impossible. So, you know, against all odds, he's had some success with these stallions himself, and he's really looking to see if he can, you know, it's a passion for him. He spends a lot of time on his matings every year, all through the year, by the way. And he always allocates some really good mares, even to some of these horses, like the stakes winner I referenced, Talk to You Later. That filly who won the 100,000 stakes race by Perfect Timber, a stakes place son of Perfect Soul. But the dam, See the Awesome, is by See the Stars, that he bred in Ireland. A huge pedigree. And he may send that mare to Frankel this year. So you can see, you know, you can see how his operation works. It's not based around a commercial enterprise, but it's really based around his vision of what he can plan in the matings to be the most successful. I have a quick story about that mare, See the Awesome.
Sure.
Because he called me up a couple of months ago, said he'd like to send that mare to see to Frankel. And I said, Chuck, you got to be kidding me. The mare hasn't had any success so far. Her first foal is by Knott Bourbon, your stallion. Second foal is by Perfect Timber, hasn't done anything. And you're wanting to send this mare to Frankel. I said, look, I'm going to go ahead and submit it, but don't expect anything. So I actually got a hold of Garrett O'Rourke at Jugmont and said, Garrett, can you help me get this? Give me the path to put this mare as an application to Frankel. He put me in touch with the guy at Jugmont in Ireland. I said it and forwarded it to him. The guy calls me up and he says, you know, we already have 260 applications to Frankel. And, you know, this mare wouldn't even make the cut. I made a case for the mayor and yada, yada, yada. And he's like, I've never even heard of Knott Bourbon or Perfect Timber, and the foals haven't done anything. I said, look, it's Chuck 50. He breeds his own stuff. just give us a consideration of not chopping her out right away. Just keep us in the loop. He said, okay, I'll do that as a courtesy to Mr. Pipke. Then the Knott Bourbon wins a good maiden special at Woodbine. And the perfect timber was the sanctuary. So I called the guy back and I said, look, we've updated this pedigree. He said, you're going in the right direction. And so he lifted me up a few slots, you know, from like maybe 300 into the 260 range.
That's very funny.
Yeah.
Well, timing is
everything. That's how this stuff works kind of behind the scenes, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Well, Sid, this continues. We talked, obviously, last week, and it was great to spend some time together also with you and Karen at Mill Ridge. That was a really fun evening.
Oh, yeah, really fun seeing you. Yeah, exactly.
Thursday night. Thanks again to Heedley Bell and Price and everybody there. This thing continues to just set records and be amazing, and we'll do a full final recap next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll talk to you soon,
Sid Fernando. Thanks, buddy. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. Yesterday, of course, a visit with John Sakura, and now a visit with Tom Evans that is really a treat to have a chance to talk to Tom, go to Trackside Farm. First order of business, though, is to let Tom really kind of celebrate the work that the horse farm workers scholarship fund has authored, and 13 children of full-time workers on farms going on for secondary degrees, you know, for higher education. And this is a project that Tom, with one of his longtime partner in Rob Whiteley, when it came to Liberation and all the great Liberation trackside breeding combos, plus Fred Seitz at Brookdale. And Fred and Tom and Rob created this concept, and officially known as the Horse Farm Workers Educational Assistance Fund. And they announced the recipients, the 13 recipients of these scholarships. And a nice variety, too, of kids going to, you know, all the different schools throughout Kentucky, and also some technical type education, the Bluegrass Community and Technical College, as well as UK, Midway, Transylvania, NKU, Bellarmine, EKU, and Thomas More. 13 kids, and the kids work at their parents work at Ashview, at Betts, at Godolphin, Hermitage, Rose Hill, Spendthrift, and Westbrook. So I'd love to have a chance for Tom to celebrate what they've achieved here, and what, you know, some of, and also given the period, 735 scholarships over the years, and you know, this fund needs some, you know, some added support and awareness. And by the way, speaking of funds, I would obviously, Buff Bradley busy now, but Buff has established a foundation as well, for Brass Hat, the Brass Hat Foundation. But Tom Evans joins us now, and it's a real treat to have Tom join us from Trackside Farm. Tom, good morning.
Hello, Steve. Good morning.
Tom, there's any number of reasons I could be calling you, of course, and we'll talk about the sale in a minute and the state of the marketplace, but I just absolutely wanted to give the assistance fund a moment in the spotlight. Horse Farm Workers Educational Assistance Fund, established by you and Rob and Fred Seitz years ago, and tell everybody what it does. Who gets the money and what they've achieved? Because it's been going on a number of years. 735 scholarships, over $1.6 million.
Well, initially, it was conceived as a perk for the horse farm workers. And the men and women that work on the farms, mucking the stalls, leading the horses in and out, and performing all the duties that make a farm go, they're the foundation of our industry. And without them, we don't have an industry. So it's their year-round dedication to the horses for which our industry is all about. And we wanted to explore a way to support them or provide a perk for them because of the job they do. So the awards are based on their qualifications. Number one, the students have to have at least one parent that works full-time on a horse farm in central Kentucky, and they're also based on financial need. So one of the things we want to do, most of our students, they need to work while they're attending school to make ends meet. So one of our goals is we want them to be able to work less and focus on school more. And we also want them to minimize any student loan debt. So students apply in the summer, and then we do interviews with them before making decisions about scholarship awards. And we try to do all these interviews in person. That's certainly what we've done in the past. We've been on Zoom recently due to COVID, but we like to meet with these kids, and we meet with them every year. And the returning students, they return for interviews every year, and they submit their transcripts ahead of the interviews, and they also submit essays as to how the year has gone, or in the case of a first-year student, an essay that tells us a little bit about them. But that adds a certain amount of accountability to how we're spending our money. And some of our scholars, the other thing about the component of the interviews is that some of our scholars, they need help navigating the college scene, not just financially, but academically and socially as well. Many of our students are first-generation college students, and they don't have members in their household that they can turn to for an experienced perspective. So when we do the interviews, it's not just finding out what they're all about, but it's also doing some advising as well. And it's the interviews makes for a long, tiring day for the board, but it's also a very rewarding experience. And listening to these students' perspective on their college experience, how they celebrate the positive and how they overcome the challenges, it's very uplifting for us. And the message we want to get to them is that not only do they have our support, but we believe in what they're doing.
Now, the initiative, and you know, there's any number of programs like this that require attention and support. There's some things about this group, in fact, that jumped out at me. Jesus Perez also won a Pollard scholarship, Carl Pollard's program at UK. Oh, that didn't sound good. I think that I think that meant that we lost Carl. We lost Carl. We lost Tom. Yeah, Case? Did we lose? We lost Tom? I'm going to say yes. We'll get him back. And what I'll do is read through. There we go. He's back. I was saying, Tom, that Jesus Perez also received a Carl Pollard scholarship award.
Right, and Carl has been a big supporter of the fund, but he also supports numerous scholarships at several colleges. And some of our students, particularly the first-generation students, can also qualify for Pollard scholarships. And it's just a great opportunity for the kids. And it's just a wonderful thing that Carl has chosen to support.
He himself, a University of Kentucky grad, and the work of the Kentucky Equine Education Project fits into this, and there's the Thoroughbred Development Fund, and there's such an infrastructure, but this has been such a success, and talk about what some of these kids have gone on to, Tom, in terms of no one's obligated to come, work in the industry. They go for their education, and whatever their aptitude is, they go off in life, better for it. Talk a little bit about those that have come through the scholarship program.
Well, many of them do seek careers in the thoroughbred business after they graduate, and that's logical because many of them, have been raised on farms, on horse farms. And so they're been intertwined with the business throughout their lives, so many of them do return to it. But it's interesting that we find many of our students that don't choose horse careers pursue careers in which they can have an impact on other people's lives. And many of them go into teaching, counseling, healthcare, career fields like that, where they can help others, and particularly young people. And I think their perspective that they have growing up influences, has a big impact on their career choice.
The opportunity, of course, return to the farm, and the first generation portion of this is really a heartening component, obviously, as well, Tom, in a lot of cases, kids that as you say, whose parents did not have the opportunity themselves for a higher education. So from that standpoint, this deserves a lot of appreciation. How is the assistance fund? Where does the money come from? And because I've never really seen like a fundraiser for it per se. And how can the public get behind it?
The fund is supported strictly through donations, and those donations can be made through the website, or the appropriate address can be found on the website.
Well, and we'll give that out in a minute. I certainly want to take the opportunity as well to get a read from you and about how things stand. We just finished with Sid Fernando, we Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, and talked yesterday to John Sakura, and was on site for book one at Keeneland. Some thoughts, Tom, about where we stand. Four books into this banner sale?
Yeah. Well, one more thing before we leave the scholarship fund that I want to mention, and that is Muffy Stewart is our administrator, and not only does she make all the details of the fund work, but she's just a great resource for these students, and she stays in touch with them throughout the year. She checks in with them through the year, and most of them refer to her as Miss Muffy, and they get to know her, and she's just one more source, one more phone number that they can call if they need some help, need some advice, or just somebody to lean on. And this fund would not be what it is without the job Muffy does.
I love it. For those that haven't been to the website, Horse Farm Workers Education Fund.com. Horse Farm Workers Education Fund.com. And it's where the kids apply and all the information. Haven't talked about this in too long, Tom. I discussed it with Rob years ago, and I saw the headline this morning, and I said I've got to get Tom Evans on to wave the flag.
Well, anybody that would have the opportunity to sit and listen to these kids interview and follow them along from year to year and watch them mature and watch them discuss how they've overcome some of the challenges they've met would want to support the fund, because it's a great opportunity to help a segment of our population that truly deserves our help.
And there's bios of the kids, there's videos, all the details. Horse Farm Workers Education Fund.com. And the brainchild of Tom and Rob Whiteley and Fred Seitz, and has impacted, you know, 700 plus lives. That's just, you know, that's funny. That's the scholarships that have been handed out. But those kids going on to school, Tom, undoubtedly inspire siblings and other friends. And so you have no idea how widespread the influence might be.
Yeah, you're exactly right. There is a exponential component to helping to one person get an education.
Yeah, it's good work, and it deserves everybody's support and attention. And, of course, Tom has done years of good work pairing mares with stallions. And how are things at trackside, Tom?
Oh, everything's fine, and you know, it's you know, the market is friendly and very accommodating in spots and unforgiving in others. And that's nothing new, and I'm not telling anybody that's something that they don't already know. But overall, there is a palpable and strong enthusiasm for buying racehorses. And it's reflected in the results.
For you, trend-wise, commercially, or you know, in terms of you know, the kinds of participants in the industry, and then from an overall, you know, from an overview, Tom, I mean, how satisfied are you with the overall direction of you know, of the industry? We've obviously going through an intriguing and some would say wholesale change in terms of what HISA is introducing to the, you know, the racing component. You know, as a longtime successful commercial breeder, what's your reaction to how things, you know, how things are shaping up on that front?
Well, there's no question that the purse structure is a big driver of what's happening in the marketplace. And it's always been, when you do the accounting, it's always challenging to justify buying racehorses. But when the purses levels are where they are now, it can make a lot more sense. And I think that's a big component of, maybe the major component of what's going on. And I think all the other things that are starting to fall in place, whether it be HISA or other things, the improved safety record, I think all these things are factoring into a positive trend.
You know, I'm thrilled to hear you say that. I just, it's, I mean, that's my impression. And it's funny though, because if you allow yourself to be taken in by, you know, some of the social media landscapes, you know, interpretation of day-to-day events, you would be convinced that there is no future. I see people, the constant refrain, a dying industry. It's like, what are you talking about? Those kinds of comments can't be coming from anyone who's actually participating in the game.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of the things we've learned is if we devote the resources and the expertise to some of the problems that any industry has, that we can improve the situation. And one of the biggest ways we've shown that is with the on-track safety record. We have shown that, you know, we can take a scientific approach to the problem of horse breakdowns and improve the situation. And that's an ongoing project and an ongoing challenge, but we've shown that we can truly make a difference. And to me, that's huge. And we need to apply that mentality and those resources to other issues that the industry faces.
Yeah, well framed. And Tom, I appreciate obviously the work that has gone into the scholarships and to the Horse Farm Workers Educational Assistance Fund, and of course the great on-track record of your work and trackside and everybody over the years that you've partnered with. It's a real treat to have you visit. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Tom. Tom Evans, everybody, Trackside Farm, and the HFWEAF. There isn't a cute little moniker or
it's something.
Yeah, there's something clever. I'm trying to come up with something. You have to read it the way it is. Horse Farm Workers Education Fund. That's as succinct as we're gonna get. I love it. Tom Evans, everybody, and a pleasure to get Tom to visit. We got a few minutes left. In fact, Casey, why don't we get Seth in here, see what Seth is looking at today. Churchill picks up the ball today at 12:45, and they've got a very nice card, we keep saying. And, in fact, the other day when I was leaving the racing office on Saturday, they'd had the Thursday overnight out, and the Thursday card caught my eye. Tomorrow at Churchill, the late pick five, a couple of maiden specials, three and ups going six, and then two-year-olds going seven. 8 by 12, then a 50-non-2 with eight going 7 furlongs, a 12-horse allowance field, first level going six, 12 in there, and then 12 in the nightcap at two-year-old filly, 6 furlong, one of those auction races with a limited cap on the cost of the purchases. And there's a bunch of firsters, so there's some pedigree work to do in that. So a very nice pick five. And today too is fine. I didn't look at this really because I was traveling, but there's a maiden two-year-old race today, 6 furlongs, and three and up starter allowance, second level allowance with a couple of familiar names, including Tejano Twist, and with a pair in there that you'll recognize, etc. I hear Seth Merrow in the background, and I thank Seth for having me on Sunday as I was in the Queen City. I was, I was in my neighborhood in Cincinnati. I was trying to do the show from Fairfield, East, where I lived in Cincinnati, but I didn't get that far, so I pulled over. But I was in East Walnut Hills, so I was in my old neighborhood in Cincy.
Happy to have you on to get the little rundown of the road trip that started closing day at Saratoga, and you were all over the place. Kentucky Downs, Keeneland Sales, Churchill, Presque Isle for a couple of visits. So we wanted to get the rundown. And we didn't only get the horse racing rundown. We got the instructions on how to eat. What is it, Cincinnati chili? No, I'm forgetting.
Cincinnati chili.
Yeah, we had the proper instructions on how to eat that. So it was a little bit of everything on Sunday.
Well, and you were completely flummoxed by the Cincinnati chili, by the appearance of it, even.
Well, yeah, with the cheese, and I started wondering afterwards. You ever have a hot dog with meat sauce at Stewart's? Cincinnati chili sounds like maybe the meat sauce they put on the hot dogs at Stewart's, which I like quite a bit.
You're finished. You are never going to live this down. The chili dogs at Stewart's. This is what
The meat sauce is actually pretty good.
This is ridiculous. I give up. I give up. And now we know. Now you know why there's stains on the sport coats, because he's eating chili dogs at Stewart's.
Well, I'm not going there for dinner, but if you stop in and you need a quick lunch, you get the dog with the meat sauce, and bingo bango, you're off and running.
Bingo bango bongo. There it is. We got a classic. That's it. Parakeet in the cage. Unbelievable. The chili, Mr. Chili Dog. There it is, folks. Also known as a Michigan, commonly known as a Michigan, around the northern climes. Very big in Quebec, by the way. The Michigan hot dog up there, out of this world. Steamy or a toasty with the meat sauce. I have a fabulous meat sauce, hot dog meat sauce recipe my mother used to make. And you're right. You're right. It is that Cincinnati chili-esque, kind of that thin meat sauce feeling. You're right.
Yeah, when you mentioned what it was like and whatnot, it reminded me of the, I thought later, reminded me of that. And I will tell people, if they haven't tried it, give it a try over at Stewart's. I think the meat sauce, because you would absolutely think, oh, a hot dog at Stewart's, but the meat sauce is pretty good. I'm going to give it a thumbs up.
All right. I will not bring this up at least anytime soon. But I will bring it up again. You can be guaranteed of that. What's the chances of you coming to Philadelphia this weekend?
The TV. That's the thing about weekend TV. I'm tied up. Oh, but I will commend your Eagles. My Jets this weekend were crazy.
How about
Syracuse?
Yeah.
Syracuse, very crazy. So I'm into football season. Syracuse and the Jets. But Philadelphia, man, they look good Monday night. Very good.
It was very encouraging, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Well, what do you got TV today, right? It's Wednesday.
Yeah. I'm doing some Delaware, some Finger Lakes. I can take a look maybe late pick for Churchill. You want that?
Real quick, yeah. Shoot through.
Okay.
We got a minute.
All right. We got a minute. Okay, so I'm four deep in the first leg, the 6, 12, 7, 4, and 3, the 12, Street Swag, first-time starter. By Street Sense, who's very good, but a sibling called Fly Away was talented early, and a sibling called the Tabulator won the first three, including the Iroquois in 2017. So in that opening leg, 12, 7, 4, and 3. I'm two deep in the second leg. After scratches, I'm left with the 3 and the 5. I'll put Flamingo Hawk on top, coming in out of a couple of tries for Rob Falcone up at Saratoga. So 3 and 5 in the second leg. Third leg, I'm four deep again. I am 8, 6, 7, and 4. That's going to be eighth race. I'll put the 8 on top, hoist the gold. Nice second place finish up at Saratoga for Dallas Stewart. Tejano Twist is coming out of some stakes. Maxfield comes out of – Burning Hunk of Love comes out of the Maxfield. So I'll have them in the mix as well. So, again, in the eighth race, four deep, 8, 7, 6, and 4. And I'll wind it up three deep, 10, 9, 14. I'll put Barone on top. Hasn't been seen since May at Indiana, but then he has some talent. Tommy Amos seems to be going well lately. Off at Cole in the mix as well. And then Awesome Charge gets in with scratches from the AE. So for Robertino Diodoro, that one might be worth a look as well. So in the final leg, 10, 9, 14.
So here it is, and we're looking at a $48 ticket. 3, 4, 7, 12 with the 3, 5, with the 4, 6, 7, 8, with the 9, 10, 14.
10 ATV, as I say, a little Finger Lakes, a little Delaware, and we'll toss in some Churchill down. So should be fun. Fun weekend coming up at Parks, man. I'm envious. I'd love to be down there because that's a huge card.
It came up amazing. And we'll start to do some serious capping tonight. And, of course, all the Saturday action gets drawn today. And it's actually a good weekend all over the place, including at Belmont / Aqueduct and Churchill with the Dogwood and more. Three more stakes at Pimlico, four more at Hi-Ho and Woodbine, etc. All right, Seth, sorry for the short visit, but we shoved a lot in today. Thank you.
Quality over quantity, baby, so appreciate the
there
visit.
You go.
Good luck, everybody.
Seth Merrow, there it is. Seth Merrow, too, on your Twitter. Thanks to Tom Evans, Trackside Farm, of course, and the Horse Farm Workers Education Fund.com. Matt Meyer, our Beat Bic winner. Congratulations again to Matt. Sid Fernando, Sirewatch, Better Refocus, brought to you by Hillendale. Chris Hyde was with us, animal lobbyist. I've already tweeted the new pack for horses. This is an outrageous situation, and we need to rally. Dick Powell, of course, for HKJC. Good luck today, everybody. Seth's pick four could get you going at Churchill. Back with you tomorrow, and then on the road to Bensalem and Center City, the Illadelf. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet.